This is 91.9 FM in Port Townsend, KPTZ, and this is Attention Please.
Can I have your attention, please?
May I have your attention, please?
May I have your attention,
please? This is Jim Burke, and this is Attention Please, and I'm here with Chief Brett Black, the fire chief of East Jefferson Fire Rescue. Is it East Jefferson Fire Rescue or East Jefferson Fire and Rescue?
We go by East Jefferson Fire Rescue. Thank you.
Okay, sure. I'm just clarifying that. So EJFR. We're here to talk about the tax levy lift, which are on the ballot for next week,
February 14th,
for Jefferson County residents. So let's talk about that. What are these two levy lifts for? They're one's for fire, one's for EMT. How do they impact people's tax bills? And how do they serve the department and help the department do its job?
Sure. I'll start with Proposition 1. Which is the fire levy lift. And Proposition 1 on the ballot, the fire districts are a junior taxing district. So we have, you know, limits to how and when and why we get our tax revenue from the community.
Right.
So fire districts only have two funds, two tax property tax funds. Mm-hmm. We have a fire fund and an EMS fund. Mm-hmm. The levy for each of them is different. So by state statute, a fire levy can only go up to $1.50 per thousand of assessed value.
Okay.
And then an EMS levy can only go up to 50 cents. The quandary is our EMS services are about 75% of our workload.
Right.
So right off the bat, there's a disparity between the revenue we can bring in for fire and the revenue we can bring in for EMS because of those caps that the state sets.
Right.
So we can't ever go higher than 50 cents for our EMS levy. It will never go higher than 50 cents.
Wow.
And then our fire levy can go up to 150, but our ballot initiative is only asking for $1.30 mm-hmm. on the fire levy. And that's Proposition 1.
Mm-hmm.
And the paradigm that we're in is, you know, since 2011, our 911 call volume has increased almost 50%,
mm-hmm.
but our budget has not, revenue has not. By, again, state statute, our annual increase can only go up by 1% without coming to the community asking for a vote. So,
and that was because of Proposition 747, the Tim Iman initiative that capped property taxes is going up by 1% a year, period, across the board. And
that's my understanding, and we don't control that. So if you're...
It's also having an effect on Port Townsend and its ability to repair streets and all sorts of other government agencies.
So the only mechanism that a fire district has to raise its revenue rates is to do what we're doing right now, which is to have propositions to raise up. We're going to restore our EMS levy or attempt to restore our EMS levy to 50 cents.
Mm-hmm.
And then bring up our fire levy up to $1.30 per thousand, not the maximum of $1.50.
You're asking for that now. Mm-hmm. Is it going to be necessary to ask the taxpayers again in another 3 years, or is it going to be longer than that?
Well, because of that 1% cycle or 1% paradigm that I mentioned earlier, where we're only by statute getting a 1% increase, inflation quickly outpaces our revenue.
Right.
As you can just do the rough
math. Well, especially over the last year where we had 8 or 9%.
But this problem has been going on for a long time in the fire district.
Right.
So it creates a pattern that where the fire district, to keep up with inflation, has to reset the levy rates every couple of years. I know fire districts across the bridge that, you know, have a cycle of 4 or 5 years. They raise the levy every 4 or 5 years.
Right.
Again, to keep up with inflation. And that's the only way that we can increase our revenue. Is to do a levy lift like we're doing right now. So I don't know that it would be 3 years, but I didn't even know what increment it would be, but it is the only way that we have to raise our revenue is otherwise we're relegated to that 1% increase.
Okay. So it's been talked about in local press, and you've mentioned it, that there's you're kind of in deficit spending right now, but there's also this thing called the reserve. And people don't understand, well, if you still have the reserve, then you're not really in deficit spending. So how can both things be true? How can you have this reserve and be in deficit spending?
Well, anytime you're spending more than you bring in, that is the slang we use for that is deficit spending.
Right.
And both the previous two fire districts and the current new merged district have been budgeting for deficit spending, or spending more than we bring in, for years, mm-hmm. both of them, Ludlow okay. and East Jefferson.
Okay.
And so that paradigm has created this situation where every year we are going to propose to spend more than we're going to bring in, looking, because we always start the year knowing how we're going to end it
right.
to a certain degree.
Yeah.
And then we start cutting off expenses and that we're already budgeted for. So for instance, back in July, we instituted a spending freeze for the rest of the year mm-hmm. for this exact reason. We were going to buy ambulances. We were going to buy, you know, very important life safety equipment for our firefighters. Uh-huh. And we curtailed all of that. The upgrades to our Marine program, we canceled it. And that's how that dysfunctional pattern of just putting another hole in the belt every year, year over year, is how both districts have been sustaining themselves, which is, as you can imagine, the longer we put off buying a new ambulance or a new engine, the more expensive they become, mm-hmm. and the more money we spend on repairs. We've already spent more than $100,000 on one vehicle last year in repairs that were not planned because it's old and it's fallen apart.
Right, I understand. So is there any other, there's no other way to really raise this revenue than to ask the taxpayers for more?
Yep.
Okay. So there's a few things, both in the press and outside the press, some things that people are concerned about. One is that there seemed to be no oppositional statement in the voter guide for an opposing viewpoint to this tax levy lift. Was it your responsibility to make sure that there was some sort of oppositional response to the pro statement that I guess EJFR put out?
Well, I'll back up half a step and just say that the process that we used was given after counsel with the elections office and our legal counsel. Mm-hmm. And I was tasked by the resolution, as you are aware of, by my commissioners to see if we could find people for both. Mm-hmm. And we announced it at public meetings, at different presentations that I was meeting with the community on, and we only got a response from one side. And, you know, I don't have the ability to force somebody to or assign somebody
yeah.
to either.
Right.
I couldn't make you do it even if I wanted to.
Right.
So I think that's the misunderstanding, is I was tasked with it, but I don't have the ability to impose it.
Right.
And so we've gone through this twice now in my short time here. We did it the same way with the merger.
Mm-hmm.
When we turn in our proposed language to the elections office, mm-hmm. they ask us the same question. Do you have a pro and do you have a con? And this is we tell them this is the process we use. We could not find a con. And then they have a process that they post on, I think, on their website. That process.
Okay. I'd have to talk to somebody at the county.
Yep. Sorry.
All right. It's fine. Yeah. Social media, Facebook and Nextdoor, there's plenty of things that people want to talk about and people throw about. And it's almost impossible to find out if these things are accurate. But one of the things that's out there is that some people, well, two things. One has to do with volunteer firefighters. The other thing has to do with money that the city used to collect for their fire department, but now the fire department is merged with you guys. Can you annex the city fire department? Is that correct?
Well, that wasn't the recent effort.
You weren't the guy, but
yeah, that was the proper term for the city relationship is an annexation, mm-hmm. which is slightly different, but it's very similar to a merger, which is what we did with Port Ludlow.
Right. Okay. Mm-hmm. So some people seem to think that there's tax revenue being collected by the city for fire mm-hmm. that should be passed along to the EJFR. And some people have put a number on that, which is $3 million. Now, I'm saying this number just because that's the number that people are bandying about out there.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything to that you know about?
Well, so if I read the question back, you're asking about volunteers and then three.
Well, yeah, we'll get to the volunteers
okay.
in a second. Let's just talk about the money.
Okay. We've had this question kind of lingering out there for a while. But first, I'll say anybody that has a question or wants to get documents about what happened during the annexation, mm-hmm. we're a public agency, and just like the city and the county, and we have to comply with public records requests, just
right.
like any government entity.
Right.
You're welcome to ask for anything that right. we might have related to the annexation with the city. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, no problem. We do that all the time.
Yep.
And then the other thing is, again, if you have questions, you're welcome to email me, contact me, or come to one of our open public meetings. We have a board meeting on the night of the 15th next week. And so anybody could, again, come during public comment
okay.
And be present there for that.
Right.
But getting back to your specific question about $3 million, we haven't had any awareness of the $3 million number. There was a small loan of approximately $300,000, I believe, when the annexation was happening. Mm-hmm. But there was an agreement that's been complied with, and our documents support that. Mm-hmm. So if anybody has a different number, I encourage them to provide us with some details,
right.
and we'll look into it. But we can't find anything that references $3 million, and the city, to my knowledge, doesn't have that either.
Right. Okay.
The payback arrangement to comply with the right. agreement.
Right, right.
And that
had to do with the fire engine?
Yes. And they ended up funding a fire engine for the district as the part of the agreement. But anybody Super. That wants to see that agreement, you know, or talk more about it, or if they have a different understanding with $3 million, just, you yeah. know, contact us and we'll be happy to look into whatever details you provide to try to prove or disprove it.
All right. Yeah. You can also write email to news@kpgz.org.
And then I think the other part of your question yeah. was about tax revenue to the city.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't know what the tax revenue is collected by the city. That maybe that would be a question for the assessor's office or the city.
Yeah.
But the citizens of Port Townsend pay the same fire levy rate as the citizens outside the city of Port Townsend right. to us.
Yeah.
And that doesn't pass through the city. It right. comes
directly to you guys.
The county
well, is
the,
to, stu-
yeah. the steward of it. And then right. we get the same. There's no different route for a resident of the city of Port Townsend.
I understand. Okay.
Yeah.
And your email, by the way.
It's bblack@ejfr.org. So that's bblack@ejfr.org.
Okay. So if you have any questions for Brett Black, chief of the EJFR, you can write to him directly. And also EJFR.org is also where you can go to their website. There was something you pointed me to, which was a great presentation about the needs assessment. What was that called again?
We have a strategic plan. Yep, we have a lot of industry-specific vernacular and slang. So mm-hmm. even if I throw something out that you don't understand, please stop me.
Sure.
And I'll explain the long nomenclature.
No worries. If we get too geeky, I'll slow you down.
There you go. But we went through, it's a two-part process. It's the standards of cover, which is really an assessment of where we are now, what we do well and not so well.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of a courageous reflection.
Right.
Because there's some things in there that we're not doing well.
And you had two independent companies work on that.
Yep.
So and then you weren't doing it from within.
No, we don't want that. We want to try to...
A sober look.
Yep.
Yeah.
And we don't want our internal assumptions and bias to steer the outcomes. And so that product gave us findings and recommendations.
Mm-hmm.
Those two are kind of words you'll see sprinkled throughout the documents.
Sure.
It's over 100 pages long, so it's not...
Wants a deep dive.
It's not a quick read. and then that document is used to build the strategic plan, which is really where we want to go and how we're going to get there.
Right.
So that is a much more, broader, as you can imagine, strategic minded document, and makes initiatives. It establishes four initiatives, primary initiatives with subcategories.
What are those four initiatives?
Basically, to try to do everything we can today with the resources and finances that we have today to provide the best service possible.
Right.
Then to number two, I believe, is to update our fiscal and budgetary processes. And we've already instituted a lot of the draft before we adopted it. We initiated some of the draft recommendations for that.
Mm-hmm.
And then number three is to look for opportunities to pursue innovations and service enhancements, and we've already done that with our Fire Cares program, which is really exciting.
The Cares program, that's yep. right.
And then number four is to, I think most importantly, build the health and resilience of our workforce. Mm. The firefighting vocation is really struggling right now with the lack of a workforce. We're currently recruiting And luckily, we have a good list of eligible candidates, but it's been a real challenge industry-wide, not just here, right, to keep firefighters coming into the vocation, career and volunteer.
Well, you said in the presentation that you have one person, mm-hmm, or you're down a person.
Person.
Mm-hmm. And you have six people who potentially could retire tomorrow if you had people to replace them. Yeah. Is that correct?
We have a lot of people that are eligible to retire, yeah, and we don't have bodies to replace them. Okay. And it takes about 6 months to recruit, go through the hiring process, background checks, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So it's not a quick process.
Right.
Similar to law enforcement.
Yeah. And of course, you know, we've here in Port Townsend, we've seen what the ferry system has been going through.
Right.
There's a worldwide shortage of mariners. I imagine there's a worldwide shortage of police and firefighters and EMS people.
Blue collar workers in general, that whole, you know, everybody that identifies as blue collar, that vocational, you know, paradigm has really been lacking over the last 10 years and dwindling. The amount of people going into, you know, calloused hands jobs is dwindling. Mm. And that's been a big challenge for us and other public safety entities. Right.
So tell me about volunteers, because some people say there's just not enough volunteers because volunteers have to do more now than they used to have to do. I mean, somebody was quoted as saying, I won't say who, but somebody said something to the effect of, you know, if you volunteer, you can get on the truck on Saturday and go to the next fire, which sounded like, wow, that sounds like a fun thing to do on a Saturday.
It does. I want to do that.
Like, right? Every kid said, yeah, I want to get on that fire truck and go to that fire and see what's going on. But you can't ever do that. Even with a volunteer firefighter, I assume that you have to train them.
Yep. Yeah, I think that's one of the things that I think I found really special about East Jefferson Fire is we're one of the few combination departments left in our industry. And combination is a word we use for career and volunteer workforce. Mm-hmm. We have approximately 40 volunteers of different types, and we can talk about that too. I think that is something that really drew me to the organization, but there's only a few of those volunteers that are qualified to fill certain roles, such as firefighting or emergency medical response. Mm-hmm. We have about a dozen EMT volunteers, and they do a great job. You probably have seen them at different special events, like the Roadie Fest. We'll staff a volunteer ambulance or two, marathons, etc. And then they also ride with our career people occasionally for their credentialing to get maintained. Mm-hmm. And then firefighting volunteers, we only have three that are credentialed, and we would love to have more. Yeah. So if anybody's interested in applying, please let me know. We pay for all the training and gear, but the commitment, the time commitment for both is extensive. It's hundreds of hours, just like a career person, just to get credentialed.
Right.
And even though we send you through that training and provide the training, a lot of volunteers don't have that time to give from their personal lives. And then if you were able to carve out a couple hundred hours during the year for the training, then you have to maintain it. Yeah. And the maintenance training for a volunteer is the exact same as a career person. Okay. The career person gets to do it on duty, which is about 20 hours a month for firefighting.
And that's just training.
That's just training. The career person has to carve out additional hours every month to stay credentialed.
Right.
And so that demand on someone's personal life is really the, you know, the kind of convergence of issues that we're seeing in the industry with volunteers. Mm-hmm. The level of certifications is not established by us. It's actually the industry. LNI, you know, we're regulated heavily by LNI, and we have to have all the training records. The driver training for volunteers and career people is the exact same. So, yeah, and we get asked, why do you send an engine and an ambulance to a medical call? Because we're all trained at the same level. Mm-hmm. And depending on how the 911 call goes, the dispatcher will escalate or de-escalate the response. Mm-hmm. So if it's a CPR call, it takes approximately 8 of us to do CPR effectively. 8. And
so
that's a lot of people converging on your emergency from different parts of the district.
So tell me about that. The CARES program, which you got a grant, I guess a $217,000 from the Association of Washington Cities to jumpstart a new partnership between the city of Port Townsend and EJFR to create and support community assistance referral and education services. Because in your presentation online, which anybody can see if they go to ejfr.org, that there was there's a tremendous number of calls that you do. You were talking about a man who had a sling, who needed help getting a sling on, and he had fallen down, dislocated his shoulder. He had not sought medical attention. But and you go out to people who need medical attention, and sometimes they refuse it. But how many, what's the percentage of calls for EMTs versus firefighters? And how many calls per year is EJFR doing right now?
So our total call volume for 2022 was 6,200 calls approximately.
Wow.
And that's with Port Ludlow.
That's over 500 a month.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
And statistically speaking, in our industry, usually you'll see EMS calls take between 70 to 80% of those responses. That's pretty normal. And then the other thing to keep in mind is all of our firefighters are EMTs as well. So they're all certified at the basic EMT level. So we're all medical responders. Even though we might have the firefighting gear on, we also can do our emergency medicine on scene.
You can render assistance to someone who's injured.
So just because you see the fire engine going, don't assume that there's no EMTs in it. They're there. They actually have to have medical gear in the fire engine as well for that same level of care. So that's why we send, you know, if we need have a CPR call or a stroke or something, it takes a lot of people, a lot of hands to save someone's life, especially in a remote area where our response times are so divergent from a metro area because we're so far apart.
Right.
So you'll see the same incident get a crew from, you know, for example, Port Townsend, Chimicum, and maybe Port Ludlow or maybe the Navy's will come up. They come over quite a bit and help us, and they do a fantastic job.
The Navy does.
And we're
the Navy helps you guys out.
And they're equipped at the same level and trained at the same level.
Well, that's amazing.
Yep.
Percentage-wise, how many medical calls versus fire calls?
So, for us, 75% of our calls are medical.
Oh, okay.
Fire calls for most fire departments is less than 5% a year, and we're at, I think, 1.5% to 2%. So we're statistically a little bit lower than what I've seen in my past, but it's pretty much in the ballpark is less than 5% are actual fires.
Right.
And then the gap between that 5% and the 75% is probably a big question mark in your head. What are we? What else are we doing?
I think I heard something in the presentation, something about batteries and smoke alarms. And
we do a lot.
Cats and trees.
Don't do cats and trees.
We don't do that.
Nope. I'm not gonna. We don't want to risk the safety of our firefighters for
to get a cat. When a can of tuna will do it, if you've seen the movie Roxanne.
There you go. But there, you know, that 20% or so are other public services that we offer. Sometimes, like when we had the freeze a couple months ago, we can pretty much, just with our wisdom of experience, know that, you know, right around 10 o'clock when it, overnight when it froze, the next morning everybody's pipes start to thaw, we're going to start getting calls for water leaks. And that, you know, that happens.
Yeah.
And so that next day we were going from call to call to call where people's pipes had cracked overnight that froze. And there's nobody else to call, so we go and we mitigate that.
And they didn't call the fire, the water department, and say, "Can you shut off my water at the street?"
They may not know where the water leak is coming from.
Yeah,
for one, I'm sure some people do call the water department, but some people aren't on a water system. Less than 50% of our district is not on a public water system, so they don't have.
I know I have a water meter, and I can turn a. I can turn a valve and turn off water to the house if I have a leak.
We also do, as you mentioned, smoke detector changes. I mean, any, you know, somebody that may have fallen out of bed but doesn't isn't hurt, but they just can't get up. We go to those a lot, and that's what the CARES unit's really good at is handling the low acuity or no acuity call, and that's really what CARES is really good at.
Okay. So the other thing you mentioned was that the Marine rescue and fire. How much of that do you do? Do you have a fire boat?
We have a couple. We have Port Ludlow had one And then East Jefferson have two, so mm-hmm. we have three now. Mm-hmm. And the two older ones right now, we're trying to assess the longevity of both boats because they're pretty old. Mm-hmm. The primary boat we have is right down here at Boat Haven at the marina, and mm-hmm. it is a fire boat. We do assist with search and rescue
right.
as requested. We helped with the search pattern when that seaplane went down a few months ago.
Oh, wow.
It was quite tragic.
That. Yeah, of course.
But so we operate within other agency cooperative agreements as well as uh-huh. needed.
And when if something were to happen, like a fire at the marina, because there was one at the in Seattle a mm-hmm. few years ago that was just catastrophic. I mean, it took away a dock or two mm-hmm. and it destroyed about 50 boats or something right. like that. And that was a big city response to that.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't fast enough to stop that from going up. And I guess it could have taken more of the
right.
of the marina with it. When you say you need more for that, is mm-hmm. that because you need more personnel who are trained to deal with fires like that?
Well, yes, but there's more. There's more complexity to it.
Sure,
it takes a lot of person power to fight a shipboard fire or marine fire. A lot of people think, well, it's in the water. How bad can it get?
Oh, I bet it can get really bad because there's batteries and diesel engines.
Yeah, and in the way I kind of
stuff like that.
You're absolutely right. Yeah. And the way I explain it is, you know, in a neighborhood of homes, there's requirements that the code has, the building code for how far apart homes need to be.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we don't have that in a harbor marine environment.
No, they're right next to each other.
They're right next to each other. Yeah. And then let's add diesel to each home, you know, or boat,
oh, yeah.
and put them next to each other, or right. gas.
Or gas.
And then...
And lots of batteries.
And then batteries, and then maybe some electricity with shore power that uh-huh. they might be connected
right.
to.
So they might be plugged in.
So the, you know, the convergence of risk is pretty significant. And then let's make it as excessively restrictive as possible, right?
We can only get to it either by land, and then we have to go uh-huh. across a dock or two,
right?
And then, or we can get to it by sea.
That may or may not be on
and
fire.
It might not be. We might be able to get close enough in either case.
Yep. Right. So our initial tactics, you know, one is to try to rescue anybody that needs rescuing.
Sure.
Two is to try to, you know, limit the exposures to the neighboring vessels, because if it's already on fire when we get there,
mm-hmm.
It can go exponentially bigger, and so we want to try to confine it to the area of origin first
yeah.
and try to prevent more damage. We'll try to extinguish the fire as fast as we can, but getting back to your question about maintenance of the unit, anything in salt water, as any boat owner will tell you, is a money pit, and it's no different for us. It take right. that the boats take a lot of maintenance
right.
and repair and training.
Corrosion.
And we had to... Yeah. significantly curtail our training for 2023 on our marine program. We cut a lot. We cut a ton of overtime that we were going to spend because we can't just put, you know, the Lawrence Street Fire Station, we can't just close it and go send them on the boat all day to go train. You know, they're still
yeah.
having 911 calls.
Yeah, yeah.
So that takes extra people then to cover the station and then let the people that are training on the firefighting marine unit go out and do the training that they're mandated to do. So we had to cut a ton of that down to the bare minimum. And then all the fuel that they spent, we cut a ton of fuel for the marine program that correlated to the training because we have to budget for that too.
Yeah, because the price of fuel went up significantly,
mm-hmm.
especially diesel.
Yep.
Well, it sounds like we have enough for two shows. So I'm going to let you go because I know you're a busy man. Thanks so much, Brett Black, Chief of the East Jefferson Fire Rescue, for joining me today on Attention Please. I really appreciate it.
I really appreciate the invite, and I'm always happy to come back. And we have a really special community, and in reflection of that, a really special fire department, I think.
May I have your attention, please?
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
May I have your attention, please?
May I have your attention, please?